Thank you, and good afternoon again, and thank you to Diane Poynter and SACPA for inviting me to come and speak to you. Dementia, is it always Alzheimer's disease? It's Alzheimer Awareness Month this January, and so I'm pleased to be able to be here today, and I hope that you'll all learn something new. I just wanted to make one small correction. I'm the regional manager for the Alzheimer's Society here in Lethbridge. Our president is of our chapter council is Rosemary Neufeld, so I don't want to take that honor and privilege away from her. So I'm a staff person, not on the board of directors. So I just wanted to make that distinction. Dementia is a growing concern in an aging population. And unfortunately, most of us at some time in our life will be touched directly or indirectly by the tragic effects of dementia. So some of my objectives today are that we have a better understanding of dementia in older people, and I'll define a little bit about memory loss and memory impairment, and then a definition about dementia, the symptoms, and some of the types. And I'll talk a little bit more about the most prevalent types of dementia, which are Alzheimer's disease and vascular dementia. As people age, they experience memory loss. Is it normal? Is it age-related memory loss, or is it mild cognitive impairment, or is it a dementia? First, what is memory? Well, it's the ability to store and retrieve information. And we have a couple of memory systems, so I'm simplifying it a bit today. We have a working memory, so our short-term memory, and then our long-term memory. So age associated memory loss, or normal memory changes associated with aging, equal momentary lapses. So we might forget parts of experiences, but we'll often remember it later. We're aware that we've had a memory lapse, and we can usually follow written and spoken directions, and we can usually use notes, and we can usually care for ourselves. And I just want to make it clear that determination of the cause of memory loss can only be made by a healthcare professional. Memory loss, when is it a problem? Memory impairment is the incapacity to learn new information or to recall recently learned information. And some of the possible causes include some drug interaction or side effects, depression, head injury, stroke, and a dementia such as Alzheimer's disease. Memory impairment, a sign of mild cognitive impairment or a dementia. Well, mild cognitive impairment is defined as memory impairment beyond what's expected for age and education without other cognitive functioning problems. So it would be someone having problems with memory, but they aren't having any other problems dealing, functioning on a day-to-day basis. Dementia is a syndrome consisting of a number of symptoms that include loss of memory, judgment, reasoning, and changes in mood and behavior. Some of the diagnostic criteria for dementia would be memory deterioration and at least one of the following manifestations. So difficulty with language or speech, which is called aphasia, difficulty recognizing familiar faces, objects, or places, that would be called agnosia, apraxia, which is difficulty performing learned movements, or impairment of executive function, such as problems with judgment, and then a progressive decline compared to previous functioning. So some of the steps that would be included when a physician would be diagnosing dementia would be taking a thorough medical history, a social history, which would include an interview with the person with the problem, and also interviewing their family member or a caregiver. They would want to do a global cognitive assessment, which includes some tests such as the MSE, the mini mental test that most of us have probably heard about. And then a thorough physical examination and some laboratory tests to rule out things like a vitamin B12 deficiency or thyroid dysfunction or those kinds of things. And then a brain scan if necessary to check for small strokes or a stroke. So some of the signs and symptoms of dementia would be progressive loss of memory, the inability to concentrate, decrease in problem-solving skills and judgment, confusion or hallucinations, or delusions, which is a false fixed idea, altered sensation of perception or impaired recognition, and impaired skilled motor function or disorientation, impaired language, and personality changes. And the onset would vary with the type of dementia that the person would have. Different types of dementia, as I mentioned earlier, Alzheimer's disease accounts for 64% of the people diagnosed with a dementia in Canada. Vascular dementia is around between 20 and 25%, and then all other dementias would fall in that other piece of the pie. And some of those are called Lewy body dementia or frontotemporal dementia, which would be Pick's disease, and perhaps Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. Different types of dementias, and just a brief definition would be Alzheimer's disease, which is a progressive degenerative disease with impairment of memory, ability to think, communicate, and to take care of oneself. Vascular dementia is a loss of cognitive abilities associated with brain damage caused by cerebral vascular disease, so single or multiple strokes. And then frontotemporal dementia is a progressive dementia that affects the frontal and temporal lobes of the brain, with fluctuating early symptoms affecting behavior and speech. And Lewy body dementia, which is a progressive dementia characterized by fluctuations in confusions and hallucinations. Differentiating the types of dementia, well, Alzheimer's disease has a very gradual onset and insidious progression. Memory problems are predominant, usually beginning with short-term memory. And that's usually featured in the early stages of the disease. They would have no history of cardiovascular accidents, and they would have a generalized brain atrophy if we could look at the brain. Lewy body dementia has a progressive decline, and it's characterized, if you looked at the brain of a person with this kind of dementia, there are abnormal structures in the brain which they've called Lewy bodies. The onset of Lewy body dementia is usually fairly rapid. It has fluctuating cognitive impairment, reoccurrent hallucinations, usually visual hallucinations, and then it would have motor features that look like the motor features exhibited in Parkinson's disease. And if you give this kind of the person with this kind of dementia the medications that you would give people with Parkinson's disease, they often have a very bad reaction to that kind of medication. We're not sure what causes Lewy bodies. There isn't a cure. And although I have heard one of the geriatricians say that some physicians have tried the use of one of the acetylcholinase inhibitors with this kind of dementia, and it's a drug called Exelon. And so there are doing some experimentation with some of that kind of drug. So then I would talk a little bit about Pick's disease, which is a frontal temporal dementia. It has an insidious onset. It has a slow progression. It's characterized by disinhibition, which be the inappropriate behavior changes, use of rude language or gestures that the person wouldn't have exhibited before, behavioral and personality aberrations. It has no known cause. The risk factors have not been determined, and there really isn't a treatment for this kind of dementia, and it would affect both men and women. Okay, I'll talk a little more about vascular dementia, which has later on, but it has an abrupt onset. It has a stepwise progression. It involves memory problems, but they're not a predominant feature. There's impaired executive function, so in planning and organizing. There's emotional lability, which is they might have outbursts of tears or angry outbursts or that kind of thing. There's a history of cardiovascular risk factors in this kind of person, and we would be able to see evidence of stroke or mini strokes on a CAT scan. So the diagnostic criteria for dementia would be, for Alzheimer's disease particularly, would be memory deterioration and at least one other sign or symptom, which would be included in problems with language, problems with recognizing familiar places or faces, or problems with learned movement, and then impaired executive functions. There would be a progressive decline compared to previous functioning, and problems would be occurring in more than just one episode of delirium. And so delirium can be confused with a dementia. The prevalence of Alzheimer's disease, in Canada today, it's estimated that there are 435,000 Canadians over the age of 65 that have Alzheimer's disease or a related dementia. 298,000 of those are women, and 137,000 are men. So you can tell from those numbers that women are diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease almost twice as much as men. There's an estimated 97,000 Canadians. It's estimated that that many people in Canada will develop Alzheimer's disease or related dementia in the year 2006. 1 in 13 Canadians over the age of 65 currently have Alzheimer's disease or a related dementia. And if you're 85 or older, then it's 1 in 3 Canadians would have Alzheimer's disease or a related dementia. It's estimated by the year 2031 that over 750,000 Canadians will have Alzheimer's disease or a related dementia. And this year, 2006, the baby boomers, the front edge, are turning 60. And so as our aging population, which is the bulk of which are baby boomers, increases, then we're going to see more dementia. So I just want to touch briefly on a little more on the signs and symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. It would be memory loss affecting daily activities. So you and I may forget where we put our car keys, but if you had dementia, you may forget that you brought the car. You have trouble performing familiar tasks. So a lady who's been a wonderful cook for years and has put on dinners for 25 or 30 people would start to have trouble organizing and planning that meal and actually performing some of those tasks. Problems with language, so it would mean that you might not be able to finish your sentence, and you may substitute a word that's similar but not quite correct, and it would make the rest of us realize that, you know, the meaning of your sentence was a little off. You could be disoriented to time or place if you have this Alzheimer's disease. So people who have lived on a street for 30 years in the same town can get lost on their own street and not be able to find their way back to their home. They may have poor decreased judgment. So things like having the symptoms of a bladder infection and not recognizing that if you have those symptoms that you should go to a doctor and get it checked out. Problems with abstract thinking, so you may have a lot of trouble starting to manage your money affairs, balancing your checkbook, paying your bills, that kind of thing. You may be misplacing things and putting them in really unusual places, such as putting your watch in a sugar bowl or your iron in the freezer. Changes in mood and behavior, so people who they may have outbursts of crying with unexplained cause. They may become very angry and irritable easily, that kind of thing. And then changes in personality. They may become paranoid or very withdrawn. And then the last one, loss of initiative. People with Alzheimer's disease talk about making bread or fixing the car, and they even can get the equipment out sometimes, but they actually don't get the task started. So they lose the ability to get things started. So we do right now have some treatments that have been approved for people with Alzheimer's disease, but we don't have a cure. And I'm sure all of you have heard of some of the treatments, the acetylcholinesterase inhibitors, which are named Aricept, Exelon, and Raminal. And they benefit some of the people by slowing down the disease process for some. They're thinking, research is showing, maybe 30% of the people that take these medications would benefit from them, and it would slow the progress of the disease a bit. But eventually, the disease process overtakes the benefit of the drug therapy. Um, There is a new drug out called Ibixa, which is often, it has a different action in the brain than the other three that I just mentioned, and it sometimes is now being used in conjunction with one of the other drugs to increase the person's ability to stay independent in some areas. There's some research going on about using cholesterol-lowering agents to help people with Alzheimer's disease. Also the use of NSAIDs, which would be an example of which would be ibuprofen. There's some research going on about that. And then often we've heard about vitamin E and other antioxidants, and there's insufficient evidence to support that they would be efficiently used to slow down the onset of Alzheimer's disease. Right now, we don't have one test that can diagnose Alzheimer's disease, and although the development of the PET scan, which shows slices of the brain, they're thinking now that that would be a useful tool. The problem is it's a very expensive piece of equipment, and we need trained people to use it, and so it may be a while before it's being used to diagnose Alzheimer's disease. Some of the risk factors for Alzheimer's disease. Heredity can be a risk factor. Only 5 to 10% of the cases are sort of in that category. There is a form of Alzheimer's disease called familial Alzheimer's that is in families and is caused by heredity. But most Alzheimer's cases are called sporadic Alzheimer's, and they affect people mainly 65 years and older. Other risk factors might be gender. As I mentioned, more women than men get Alzheimer's disease. Your education, some research has shown that if you have an education, formal education lower than grade 6, that your risk is increased. Some research has shown that if you have a severe head injury at some time in your life, that would be a risk factor for developing Alzheimer's disease. And then mild cognitive impairment is also a risk factor. Some of the people that are diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment go on to develop Alzheimer's disease, but not all. Also, more and more often, research information coming into my office is saying that diabetes has been determined now as a risk factor for Alzheimer's disease, along with high cholesterol and high blood pressure. The information I have here says that about 12 to 15% of the people diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment, so remember that's just memory loss without one of the other indicators, about 12 to 15% of those people go on to develop Alzheimer's disease. And I'd like to talk just a little bit more about vascular dementia, which is the second most common form of dementia. The diagnostic criteria for that would be memory deterioration and at least one of the following manifestations. So again, problems with language, problems with recognizing familiar places, names, or objects, apraxia, problems with learned movement, and then impairment of executive functions. There's a stepwise progression of the disease, and there's always an abrupt onset. Memory problems could happen, but they're not a predominant feature. There's impaired executive function. There's emotional lability. There's a history of cardiovascular risk factors, and you would be able to see evidence of small strokes on a CAT scan. So high risk groups for people with vascular dementia are the elderly, smokers, people with hypertension, diabetes, arterial fibrillation, or past transient ischemic attacks, or a stroke. Slightly more men than women are at risk for this kind of dementia. Currently, we have no approved treatment in Canada for vascular dementia. And so the current treatments would be aimed at controlling the risk factors. So medication to control your cholesterol, reduce your cholesterol, sometimes an anticoagulant such as Coumadin, medication to reduce your high blood pressure and keep your diabetes under control. And, of course, you have to stop smoking if you want to reduce your risk factors. Now, I always like to just finish up my little talk by giving people hope, because I've just told you some quite disturbing news. And so there are some things that we can't change about our risk factors, such as our gender, our heredity, and our age. But there are some things that we can do to help reduce the risk of getting dementia, and so I just wanted to share a few of those with you. You need to feed your body properly, so you need to eat lots of vegetables, whole grains and fruit, and frequently raw. You need to look for foods rich in folic acid, antioxidants, and vitamin B6, B12, C and E. You need to look for foods rich in omega-3 fatty acids, like those found in fish, walnuts, ground flaxseed, and avocados. And you need to avoid excessive alcohol and fat and sugar. Although it's said that red wine can be very good for people wanting to reduce the risk of Alzheimer's disease, but I think they're talking about a glass a day, one glass a day. So you need to feed your mind. You need to stay mentally active. You need to take interesting classes and learn new things. Study a foreign language. Try learning the piano. Read as much as you can. Try your hand at crossword puzzles and Scrabble and jigsaw puzzles. And the more challenging the material, the better. And yesterday I had lunch with a lady who said, have you tried the new, I think it's called Sudoku. It's a number puzzle that she's enjoying. And you need to stay socially engaged. You need to be out and around people and enjoying people and interacting. And if you can find a person or have made a friend who makes you laugh, then spend as much time with them as you possibly can. Laughter is good for the soul. You need to also mind your body basics. You need to get regular exercise. Research has shown that if you walk at least 30 minutes a day, three times a week, you can reduce your risk for Alzheimer's disease or vascular disease. You need to keep your weight under control. You need to avoid and or treat high blood pressure. Not sure how you avoid it, but you need to make sure that it's treated. And also, you need to get adequate rest and sleep. It's very important. So thank you very much, and I hope you have some questions for me later. I'll try and answer them.
Thank you, Connie. Enjoy your lunch, and she'll be back up here for questions after we eat. Thank you.